this came in the early 60s. At first we used DuPont inks, and then because they were using a lot of precious metals and were relatively expensive, we put a group together and started developing our own, which we later licensed DuPont to build for us. So it wasn't really a core competency, if you will, although we didn't call it that back then. But the fired resistors and electrodes were very, very robust. And we frankly didn't know what to expect when we started that. But they did very well. We also, in those days, the transistors and dual diodes were 15 mil square. And they had three little 5 mil copper balls. But we were doing flip chip, but with three copper balls. And we saw our reflow goes down on the substrate, which are a half inch square. And we could put four of those on with a bunch of resistors and make up a, in those days, that was a whole circuit. And then when we started to get into integrated circuits along about 65, 66, we suddenly needed 16 balls. And copper balls aren't very forgiving. If the chip tilts, they don't make connection. So one of our engineers, a guy named Lou Miller, invented the C4 joint, a controlled collapse chip connection, C4Cs. And this was basically a solder ball on the chip. And when you reflowed that, the solder ball melted. And if you watched it under a microscope while you were reflowing it, and we did it through a glass slide, the viscosity of the solder, the balls would melt, not all at the same time, but they would melt. And then as they melted, the whole chip pulled right down, like 1 to 2 mils. We only got a 5 mil ball, so you know, this is quite a bit of movement. You can see it actually pull right down, and then it reaches an equilibrium, and it comes back up a little bit, and everything stabilizes. And it will pull the chip into alignment if it's twisted, and it will take it from the in the Z direction by another 1 or 2 mils, so that the whole thing joined all at once. And this was a tremendous invention, because now all of a sudden you've got a process that is very, very forgiving in manufacturing. And we've extended that over the years to, let's see, when I retired in 92, we were experimenting with 3,200 balls on a chip, or interconnections on a single chip. And we had over 750 balls on a chip in production, in manufacturing. And so, so over the years, we really extended that technology a lot, and it proved to be an extremely good technology. We actually did a lot of experiments on it because as we kept extending it up this the I/O count, you know, we kept worrying about, you know, are we going to run out of steam here? Where do we fall off the edge of the cliff? And we found that you could get a 99.95% manufacturing yield on joining the chip, almost independent of the number of balls on it, at least up to 700 or 800. So we're not talking now about 99.95 on the ball.
Right.
We're talking about on the chip. And that is one heck of a good manufacturing process. So, but those were few of the two of the interesting things. Now the other thing that was interesting was when I joined IBM, my first job was testing ferrite memory cores. And that was our main memory back then. And I started with the core was 80 thousandths in diameter with a 50 thousandths hole in it. And we put three wires through that. You have to have an XY an X and a Y wire and a sensing wire, a Z. So you got to get three wires through every core. And we took that down when I moved over to passive components, like 59, we were working on a 10 mil diameter with a 6 mil hole, still trying to put three wires through it. And it was getting very tricky to get three wires through that. But the when we went to semiconductor memory, the core memory was up to, we had like 4,000 bits of main memory mid-60s in one, you know, in a core point. That was a lot of memory in those days.